Is this the reading room?
Yes, I'm Saad Manzoor.
And I'm Travis Howard.
This is Reading Room Talk. Thank you for pressing play.
Welcome back.
Oh yeah, we're back. We're back with the legendary episode already. This is an all Buckeyes episode.
There you go.
All Buckeyes right here. We're here with Dr. Fakofi Obeng. How are you today, man?
Doing well, sir. How are you doing?
Good, good. Thank you so much for making the time, man. We appreciate it.
I appreciate you guys inviting me. Thank you so much, Saad and Travis. Thank you so much.
No problem. So, man, you got to take us back to medical school now. Tell us, what was your toughest class or rotation in medical school?
Oh, gosh. I had a lot. So I would say one of my toughest class or rotations was third year general surgery rotation. I did it at Grant Hospital in Columbus through the Ohio Health. Yeah,
that's a level one trauma center.
It is. That was, yes. You know, birthday, Travis. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
That's a lot.
So yeah, that was probably one of my hardest. And then one of my other hardest, it wasn't necessarily the content that was hard, but it was just the preceptor was an out rotation I did as a fourth year, believe it or not, at Children's National Medical Center in the D.C. area. I had I did a rotation in peds, sports medicine, and like the attending there, I don't know if she didn't like me or what, but she did not give me a good report. So.
That makes no sense.
It doesn't. I don't know what happened, but
was there any like particular situation or like was there just something like what did you feel like the vibes were?
I just felt like the vibes were like you know, like I'd ask questions or she'd be like, okay, what about this? What about that? Whether it be like the anatomy, you know, dealing with like, I don't know, it could be like things for like shin splints and children to, you know, different things like that. And I felt like I answered the question appropriately, but when I looked at the evaluation, it was like, oh, this is not a good evaluation. Like, what did I do wrong? So it was just weird. You know how sometimes some attendings, you might think you're doing well in a rotation, but then they're like, no, this person didn't know this, didn't know that. And they're like, wait a second, I thought I answered all your questions.
You know what, Paco? I'm going to get that person's information because my wife had a similar experience.
Really?
Okay. Oh, yeah. And it was so discouraging for her to like, you know, work her tail off, and then somebody hits you in the face with a bad evaluation.
You didn't see it
coming, man. It's like, it'll rock your world.
Exactly. Yeah, you're like, what is going on?
I want to know who that is. And you said she? So it's just too many things lining up here, bro.
Actually, I could definitely give her her information to you. She might still be working there. I don't know if she's still working there, that attending, but
Yeah, now they're supposed to be helping you out, man. Like, even if you're struggling in the beginning, you're supposed to, like, get some feedback and know that you know, there's some things you need to do better, not just, like, you shouldn't be shocked at your evaluation.
No, exactly.
But real talk, it's not even that. It doesn't feel that way many times. Like, they're there to help you. And
that's true.
That's why talking and for
it's
my
very
gosh.
Important.
No, Major, you're not alone, man. Anyone who's going through that, you are not alone.
Yes.
Almost everybody.
Yes. Yes, not alone at all.
And it's crazy. It's like you'd almost rather be on the general surgery rotation because you're like, at least I'm working hard. At least I know I'm working hard. Like, I know what I need to be doing.
Exactly.
You have like no idea.
No idea.
Your smile's telling me I'm good, and then get the evaluation. You're like, come on, man.
Right. Why are you hating on me?
Nah, man. No exit interview, nothing, man.
Right.
Not cool, man. So, anyways, man. So, tell us, man. So, where are you from? Where are your folks from? Where'd you grow up?
Oh, thank you so much for asking, Saad. So, originally, was born in Tacoma Park, Maryland, and grew up in Montgomery County at
MoCo.
What's his name? Adventist Hospital. That's where I was born back.
Oh man.
Yes, back in the day. but I grew up in Ohio. So my mom remarried and we moved to Ohio right before I turned six. And then so I pretty much did all my schooling in Ohio from elementary school to medical school and residency. But there was a brief period of time where I did live in Ghana where my family's originally from. And my parents originally came from Ghana to US in the late 60s, early 70s. And then
60s, 70s. Wow.
Yeah. So my father actually came, I think he came in, I want to say 1969. And my mom came the following year, 1970. And then they had my older brother in 74. Oh, wow. Yeah. So
Okay.
Yes. So it's funny, they're from a generation where like they were like, you know, I mean, similar to many first-gens, like they were the first people from their cohort from Africa to kind of be in the U.S. Yeah.
And, trailblazers.
Yes, wow. Yes, definitely, definitely. So yeah, and it's funny because, and Sai, you probably could relate to this, you know, sometimes our parents, you know, they come from, especially from Africa, you know, it might be a situation where they spend most of their adult life in the U.S. versus their mother country, you know?
Yeah, so that's exactly right.
That's, yeah, that situation, especially my mom had, where she actually spent most of her adult life in the United States, as opposed to.
No, that makes sense. Yeah, you're like, they're more American than you are.
Right.
Exactly. Oh, that's funny, man. I love it, man. And then you grew up in, kind of your schooling, you said most was in what part of Ohio?
Yeah, so I grew up in a suburb of Cleveland called Euclid, Ohio.
Panthers. Cleveland.
Yes, yes.
You.
That's right. That's right. You know, Sai, you went to Case, so you know.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. So, nice. So it was, so I went to Euclid High School, graduated in 97, and Ohio State, that's where I met Sod. Buckeyes. Okay. Yes. Yep.
You know, all discretion here, you know, Paco is my RA, my freshman year.
Yeah.
Ohio State. Mm-hmm. Blackburn Hall, stand up.
Exactly. Blackburn, that's right. That's right.
Yeah, yes. Man. Oh, that's awesome, man. Yeah. So, and how was the Ohio State experience? We were all there at the same time, apparently.
Oh yeah, so
yeah, that's crazy. Yeah, I was, man.
Oh, cool. Do you live on campus or did you live?
I lived in Smith Hall, so I would have there 98 and lived in Smith Hall.
We're all there on the same time.
Just one year. Yep, that's crazy.
Wait, Smith Hall is that's South Campus?
That's South Campus.
Yep. South Campus.
Oh
wow.
Yeah, that's a different world.
It was. I don't know how
you survived.
Three people in that, man. I think back. I don't know how I survived it.
Nah, yeah, man, you made it out. That's awesome.
Exactly. And you're successful, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I love it, man. That's cool, man. Very cool. Very cool. And you were pre-med the whole time, like high school, meds, like undergrad, or like were you kind of back and forth?
Yeah. Thanks for asking me that question, Sai. So I was pre-med, so I was a bio major, like 89% of us are who want to go to medical school. Mm-hmm. So I was a bio major, and then I didn't get in straight through. So I did end up going to grad school for 2 years at Ohio State, too. I got my master's in public health at the School of Public Health. I did do that. Mm-hmm.
That
was cool. Yeah, so I was there. So I was at Ohio State for 6 years, so 2 for master's and 4 for undergrad.
Oh, man. Yeah, Ohio State.
Before I went to school, yeah.
Good times. Yeah. So can you tell us a little bit about the experience of just applying to, you know, med school, just trying to figure out like what to do after undergrad, like what was kind of your, you know, path, I guess.
Yeah. So it wasn't a straightforward path. So it was one of those things that, you know, I applied initially coming straight out of undergrad, didn't get in, needed to strengthen my application. So I ended up going to grad school.
Mm-hmm.
And then during those 2 years, actually, what did I do? Did I apply? I can't remember if I applied again or not, but I ended up getting after grad school. I might have. And then after grad school, what I ended up doing was going to work as a, it was like a fellow, like a 2-year fellowship with the Association of Schools of Public Health.
Nice.
And, so that was actually when I was in Maryland for like 2 years after grad school. And actually I stayed with some relatives.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was during that period of time, because I worked, even though we were a fellowship through the Association of Schools of Public Health in DC, we were with federal agencies. So I was with the Health Resources and Services Administration. So they kind of, you know, they provide funding to like medical schools and to different agencies. So the bureau I was with was the Bureau of Health Professions.
And oh, wow.
So it worked perfectly. So of course they're giving grants to medical schools and stuff like that. So I got to meet some people who are involved in the medical education process. And I got to meet a guy, his name, nice guy, Tyrone Carr. He actually, shout out to Tyrone. Yes. Great guy. He was actually one of our summer programs at Ohio University. And he was like, you know, you should apply, you know, think about, you know, OU, Common, Athens. And I was like, okay, sure. So I ended up applying during my time in that fellowship. And thank God I was able to get in. So it worked out perfectly because I did the program from 03 to 05, and then mm-hmm. I was able to get admission to the fall of 05 at Ohio University College of Osteopathic Medicine. So
Paco, what in your application would you say was one of your weaker points?
Oh gosh, that was just one.
I appreciate the honesty, man. Of course. People need to know.
Of course.
It might not be stellar the first go.
No, and I think that's what happens, you know, especially if people, when we go into medicine, you feel like everybody's perfect. Not everybody's perfect. Exactly. A lot of people, you know, they try multiple times. In my case, I did. So I said the weakest part, like my GPA wasn't the greatest. It was, it was in a low, I think it was like, coming out of undergrad, it was in the low threes, I think. It was like 3.1 or something like that.
But that's not bad, though.
That's not bad, yeah.
It's not bad. That's actually good for all the science classes you were taking.
Yes. Yes.
But they make you feel like it's not good. And it's like,
yes.
Yes.
and
you got probably... a 3.0. Yeah, that's, you can make it. You'll be fine.
That's true. And that's the thing, too, at Ohio State. You guys probably know this. Like, Gen Chem is like the weed out.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Oh my gosh. I'm telling you, like, why is it at what was the name? My first gen chem professor. She wasn't even a professor. I think she had a master's. And she was teaching, like, no. Seriously, that kind of makes me mad. I'm, you know, 20 plus years later thinking about it.
Think back on it, like,
yeah. So she would, her name was Miss Andrea Huff. So this lady had to have been at least at that time, probably in her 60s. So she would actually, I mean, she was a good instructor, but she would go out of her way to trick you. So she I don't know if you guys ever had her, but she would basically, she would admit to it, she'd be like, you know what I do on the exam, I will purposefully put answers on there that if you miss a decimal point or if you miss a one small calculation in these formulas, that's the answer you'll get. Like,
oh yeah, for sure.
Seriously, I'm like, that's so wrong. Like,
it really is.
Not in chemistry. Nah, that's what they try to do for sure.
They're trying to weed them out, man. Because I mean, we're Ohio State. It's 50,000 people in the undergrad. I mean, like that Gen Chem class, you know, probably has like 1,000, 2,000 people in the whole, like, in all the sections together, you know?
Together, so, yep. Mm-hmm.
They're trying to get people out. They're literally trying to get people out.
Literally, yep.
Yeah, man.
So that was my hardest. That's probably one of my hardest courses. And then going back to early question too, Travis, I think one of the things probably, besides the GPA, was like MCAT. My MCAT wasn't too great coming out. So those were probably my two biggest, like, weaknesses in my application initially.
So you got the master's in public health, that definitely sets you apart. Did you have to retake some courses, or how did it work to get your application wanted it?
That's a great question. I didn't retake any courses. No, I did all the public health curriculum while I was in grad school. I did not retake any courses per se. But I just worked on getting my MCAT better. So I was able to do better overall my MCAT second or third time I took it. I think that helped my application essentially. And then
that's what's up, Paco. You probably had more time to study. You know, you were probably able to settle in and kill the master's program, have more time to study for your tests. And there you go, man. Big ups to you for sticking with it and fighting and not giving up. Because that's that point is where a lot of people might decide to hang it up.
I feel like I agree. I think a lot of people would have like came to Maryland like you did and just, you know, kind of just chilled out at the HSS and be like, oh, you know, that's what I'm gonna do now. But you like really wanted to do it and reapplied and made it happen for yourself. And that's awesome. Now did you apply to like MD NDO programs the first time, or did you kind of what was that whole process for you like?
Oh, good question, Si. So I didn't. So initially I just did MD programs, but then later on, obviously after I met Tyrone. And you know, was in the fellowship program, right? That's where I applied to both MD and DO schools.
Yeah.
So OU was the top one of the top ones that I applied to. And I think I might applied to PCOM in Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
But yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah, you get a lot of misinformation, I think. Like, they make you feel like you shouldn't apply to, like, DO
schools.
Right, like, it's like a different, you know, education. I mean, I guess it could be a little bit different, but I mean, you're taking the same classes, you're
going
to the same residency. You know, I did my fellowship or my internship in Allentown, Pennsylvania, Lehigh. Like, I mean, our whole, like, all, like, almost the whole residency was DOs. You know, from the Penn program there.
That's
so,
right.
I mean, it's the same.
It really is.
Every DO I talk to tells me it makes them a better doctor. I mean, unabashedly, they let me know flat out.
No, that's real.
It was definitely a good experience too. And I think especially with now that the ACGME, I think AOA are all combined in terms of postgraduate education. Like, it literally is no difference in terms of.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, you're taking the same. So you're taking step one, step two, step three, just like MD program.
Yep. Yeah. So when I was there, I was their version. It's called the COMLEX, and I'm sure your colleagues have said they took the COMLEX, or whatever, but it's equivalent to like USMLE. So you had to take COMLEX 1, 2, and 3, and then of course after step three, of course you do your specialty boards or whatever. So yep.
No, that's. It's funny, man, because it's like the pickiest people, like the undergrad people in undergrad who are not in med school. They're like, "Oh, I'm only applying here. I'm only doing this."
Yes.
Once you like get out and have some experience and talk to Tyrone, you're like, you know what?
That's right.
That's right.
This could work out. This is gonna work out.
Exactly.
Let me get to where I need to get.
That's the key. Exactly, Si. And you guys are both right, because I mean, that's the key. Is like you just gotta look to see where you want to go, what you want to do. You know, with your career and stuff like that, because ultimately, you know, especially if you're dealing with patients, you really don't care. I mean, they don't care where you went to school, as long as you're a board certified, you know, or board eligible, you know, doctor, then they don't really care where you went to med school.
That's true, man. Yeah. That's true. I think the only person that cares is Hasan Minhaj. I don't know if you guys saw him.
Yes,
I see clown on the DOs.
Yes. Wow. Oh gosh. And the funny thing too, Saad, is like that. Yeah, I think the AOA really was upset about that, and I think they as an advocacy group, they kind of went after him.
Definitely did. Yeah, man, it's funny, man. You need the information though. Like, if you don't know, then like, because I mean, getting into any med school is like impossible.
Correct.
You
know? Yes.
Like you could definitely say that people who like end up in DO program, that's probably more competitive than going to like a Caribbean school, though, like someplace overseas, you know. So like, and those people get MDs as opposed to the DOs. It's like it doesn't really make sense. So you know, hopefully anyone who's like listening and thinking about applying, like, open up the application.
Yep.
Open it up.
Absolutely. I agree. Yep, I agree, and I'm with you 100%. I think definitely this day and age too. The field, I think in general, needs more doctors, more medical doctors. I'm sorry to say this, but like, I feel like we need more doctors. Like, great, you know, everybody on the medical team has their role. Nothing against, you know, physician assistants or NPs or whatever, but I feel like in the field, we actually need medical doctors. And so I think the more we can expand the pool, whether it be an MD or a DO position, the better to me. So
that's so true, man. So what was like the kind of the makeup of your like you know, program at OU? Like, was it pretty diverse, or was it, would you say, kind of more homogenous Ohio people? Like, what would you say?
Yes. Yeah, I know, right? Yes. In terms of geographics, it was pretty diverse. I mean, we had people from Indiana, people from Florida, people from like some people from people from all over the country. I'd say maybe 30%, 30 to maybe at most 40% were like out of state people.
Okay.
And then the other 6 to 7% were Ohio, you know, Ohio people. And in terms of ethnic background, I would give our school pretty good credit, because I would say our class was, I think it was like 110 or 100, or yeah, maybe just a little bit over 100. I'd say out of that, maybe 30, maybe 20, maybe no more than 30% were like an ethnic minority, so like African American or Asian. So you know, it was pretty diverse.
No, that's good, man. That's good. That's really awesome, man. So,
yeah, sounds good.
And so, so tell us about applying to residency. How was that? And what did you decide to do residency in?
Yeah, so initially I was interested in doing like peds because, you know, when I was little, I was interested in peds. And, you know, after that rotation at Children's National, I changed my mind quick.
See? That's what happens.
Changed my mind with the quickness.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah.
That's unfortunate, man.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah,
they lost one. They lost one.
They did. They sure did.
I gotta feel like they lost many more. This one right here. This
that's right.
I can't wait. I can't wait to ask. Yeah, we gotta talk about who.
Oh yeah, for sure. For sure. Definitely.
No sign.
Yep.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I ended up doing internal medicine. Ended up applying to different programs. Ended up getting into the St. Joe's, but actually I had a scramble though, so I didn't get in initially.
Explain the scramble. What is a scramble?
Yeah, so the scramble is basically you have the match, so you apply for different programs. Mm-hmm. And then back when I sound almost prehistoric, but back in 2010, you know, you had different matches. So you had the AOA match or like the osteopathic match, and they had the MD match. The AOA match typically would be earlier. Like a bonehead. I was like, I think I wanted to stay in Columbus. Maybe I want to go to Ohio State. So I didn't apply to the AOA match when I should have. But again, ended up, I think I applied to like, I think maybe either Ohio State or somewhere, maybe in Columbus, I think for residency for internal medicine. So ended up not matching with anybody. So when you scramble, you basically are looking for open spots. So you're applying to unfilled positions in different residency programs. So that's why I call it scrambling. So because you're just looking to see what they have. And so I ended up, thankfully, ended up being at St. Joe's, which actually ended up being a blessing in disguise. So St. Joe's and you know, Travis, you're from the you know, from the Warren area, you kind of know that, you know, St. Joe's and St. Elizabeth and kind of like the whole area. So St. Joe's was a 120 bed community-based hospital, osteopathic hospital, but we only had I think two residents per year for internal medicine, but it ended up expanding to three the year I came in. So it was perfect. So I ended up taking that slot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, after scrambling, got my program director name, shout out to Dr. Gretchen Nichols. She's great. She's actually at East Liverpool Hospital now, but she was she was good people. She was very personable and, you know, welcomed me into the program. I loved her. Like, she ended up going elsewhere throughout my 3 years at St. Joe's, but she was great. So yeah, so I ended up
going
into the program. Yeah, she was very supportive. Yeah, so Dr. Gretchen, shout out to her. Yeah,
that is awesome, man. Yeah, it's the people, man. You end up, you choose the people, man.
That's true.
The people will make it or break it for you. So that's awesome. Right. That you're good people there.
Yes. Yes.
It's nice to be at a smaller hospital, of course.
It is. It is, and it's funny too, Saadi. And you'll probably even compare this to, I mean, being at a bigger institution. But like, I think in terms of internal medicine wise, it was good because, you know, from an IM standpoint, you got the chance to do different things. You could do, you'd be pretty much the first person to do central lines, arterial lines.
Okay.
As an intern though, that's the thing. Like most people, like I have friends. Yeah. Like, and I'm sure you guys can attest this. I have friends. One of my good friends, she's a nephrologist, but she did her, we went to med school together. She was actually a year ahead of me. We went to med school together, but she ended up matching at Cleveland Clinic. Mm-hmm. For you know, she did her, of course, the 3 years of IM and then before doing her fellowship. But she was telling me, like, it wasn't until like their second year when you can really do those procedures because everybody else is in front of you to do those. Sign off, you know, get like, you have to make sure you're senior, all those people get the chance to do those procedures before you get to do them. But
that makes sense, man.
Yeah, that's a good experience right off the
gate. Yes. So, and it's awesome. Funny too, man. We I don't know, because it was kind of like the Wild Wild West in the sense that, like, after your, I'm sure things are different now, but after your first month as an intern doing, you know, being on call, like you're paired with the second year or third year, your first month, and then after that you're it.
Man.
Yeah. Wow. As an intern. It's so crazy. It's scary. Yeah. But, you know, yeah. But, I mean, the attendings were.
That's how you learn.
Exactly.
It's true, man. Yeah. I remember my intern year right out of med school, and I'm in the ICU, placing lines, intubating people, and you're like, just a minute ago, I was being tested on pharmacology. It's like, and now I'm doing this. Okay, here we go. There's a lot of learning between you got clinical rounds and all that good stuff.
Yes,
so I don't want anybody to get scared. But, you know, when they say don't go to the hospital in July,
interns. All the interns they're just starting. That's right.
Yeah.
That's funny, man. But, you know, there's something to be said. I mean, you can read about putting in lines all day and, like, watch YouTube videos, but there's nothing like doing it. And the more you can do it, the faster you'll be good at it, you know?
Yes,
That's all
it
is.
Get your confidence up. Get your reps up.
Exactly. Yep. Just like anything else. Get your reps up. Right. Exactly, man. Awesome, man. That's really good, man. I mean, I trained at, GW, and GW is a small hospital, too, in the middle of D.C., and kind of felt the same way. Like, for radiology, they kind of... wasn't like first month, it was after the first year, they kind of threw us in as like you're like the only radiologist on call, like all night.
Exactly.
That's why I learned, you would just call stuff and you would just be nervous in the morning.
Yes, you're like, ooh, did I call that chest x-ray right, or did I call that CT right?
Oh man, exactly. You're like, oh, let me call these people back. All right.
Heat is on.
Yes.
Oh, that's awesome, man. That's really good, man. The journey is fun, man. Like when you look back on it, of course, it's like, oh man, you did everything. You got there, man. So
that's true. Yeah. So Paco, what was the hardest thing you overcame, and how did you do so?
Oh, you mean all throughout the medical
to this point today, man. Okay. You know, just inspire us, because I know I'm about to be inspired.
Well, I hope so. I pray so. You know. I guess the hardest thing to overcome was almost like a self-defeating spirit. So I actually had to repeat my first year in med school. And that was really hard because a lot of people I came up with, one of my good friends, my friend Cindy, who's a nephrologist I was referring to earlier, like we all bonded and became friends, and it was sad to see them kind of go on to their second year and I'm still in first year. So that was really hard on me. So it was really hard. And so, but that definitely had a supportive family, especially my mom was very supportive, encouraged me very, she was very prayerful. She was like, okay, you can do this, things happen for a reason. And so, thank God I was able to continue on, do better. The second go around, first year, made some good friends. Two of my good friends to this day, we all stick tight. Dr. Kim Jackson, she's actually the program director, I think, at East Liverpool for family practice. And then Dr. Aaron Didich is a family practice physician in Northeast Ohio. So all three of us, we all kind of like hung together and bonded. That helped us, helped me especially get through repeating the first year and beyond.
Well, I mean, it's obvious you're brilliant. It's obvious you have the talent. It's obvious you can do what you put your mind to.
Thank you, sir.
I'd like to know, what do you think, what was the cause of you having to repeat your first year?
You know what? I think it was a number of things. I think on my end, I think probably being more... strategic in terms of how I prepare for exams. So that was really my downfall. It was just the exam portion. So we went at OU, you have to do, and it might be at similar where you guys went to med school. Like we did organ systems. So we would study, like we do like cardiovascular block, respiratory block, for whatever, 6 to 8 weeks, whatever. And so when I hit cardiovascular block, that was like the hardest block. But I think it was hard because cardiovascular physiology was no joke. The fact that maybe not doing enough test questions, maybe I think might have helped if I had done that more, or being able to test being able to understand the question better, because a lot of times what would happen is I'll take the exam, I'd study, but when it came test time, it wouldn't show. Like I might know all the anatomy and physiology, but I need to know how to apply it in terms of addressing a question that's being
the
asked.
Test.
And I think that's yeah, man, and that happens to so many of us. You could spend the time, put in the time, put in the work, but you go to get to that question, and sometimes it's the way it's asked. Sometimes it just doesn't. Sometimes that connection is just. Yes. Man, I'm telling you, your journey and what you struggle with, I struggled with it too, and so many people have. But man, just a shout out to you for sticking with
it. Thank you.
I hear you talk about family. I hear you talk about support. I hear you talk about the people around you rallying you and getting you on to that next step.
Yes,
sir. So that's wonderful, man. And thank like you I so told much. You, I was going to be inspired.
Thank you. Thank you, bro. I appreciate it.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Oh, man. Yeah, now you're unstoppable, man. You were just not going to be stopped. You were just not going to be stopped, man.
I'll try it. By grace of God, I'm trying, man.
And you're a writer.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
I want to talk about that, but not keep you too long. Go ahead.
Yes, yes. Tell us about your writing. I know like you've been big into like comic books and everything way back in the day. So tell us how you got into writing.
Yes, Sadia. You know my story, a little bit of my story from my time at Ohio State and all the stuff with comics I'd be collecting and posters I have and stuff.
Oh man,
comic. What's your favorite?
Oh, so my favorite comic, I would say I have a lot of them. My number one would be the Black Panther run by Christopher Priest. That's probably my favorite comic series.
Awesome.
Yeah,
that
was actually during our time at Ohio State that series came out. That was in 98. He was writing it from 98 to I think 2002. So that's like my favorite. Yeah.
Say, man, Paco, see, you're on a different level, man. I was listening to Diplomat, listening to, like, Jim Jones.
Right,
and Paco's on Black Panther at that time. I'm like 20 years late. I'm like, oh, you see new Black Panther movie? Like, man, Paco got the original comic book.
Yes, sir. Paco, he's looking at these new movies with the side eye, like,
right.
Not really.
You guys are late to the party.
Exactly. Super late. You're like, yo, Black Panther, you heard of this guy?
But it's funny though, because it's nice though to see so many people embrace a character that I've loved since like undergrad, and a lot of the stuff, and I'll get back on the question about the writing, but a lot of the stuff with the that you saw, especially in the first movie, which Chadwick, rest in peace, Chadwick Boseman, was pulled from what's his name's run, Christopher Priest. Christopher Priest was like the first Black writer on that series, but because before that, Stan Lee and Jack Kirby created the character like in the 60s. Then Don McGregor, white dude, wrote it like in the 70s, and then they rebooted it in the late 90s, and Christopher Priest was like the first Black writer on it, and he took it up a notch. Yeah, like the Dora Milaje, that came from Christopher Priest.
Really?
The Kamoyo beat. Well, it was actually the Kamoyo card, but then Ta-Nehisi Coates, who subsequently wrote Black Panther later on, he made kimoyo beads, the whole I'm trying to think what else, the using the vibranium in their costumes, that's all from Christopher Priest. So like he really elevated the character more.
Oh, that's interesting.
That's
cool. You kind of see it throughout like Marvel like universe, like the vibranium kind of like
So with the writing, it was basically I had had this story, my love of comics, my love of like movies and then like politics, and so I like to watch shows like 60 Minutes and different news shows, so I'm into like the what's going on
again we were watching Wayans Brothers.
He on 60 Minutes. Like, what's wrong with y'all? Y'all slow. Come on, bro.
I know.
I'm like, Pop, you see the new 60 Minutes? He's like,
Right. Right. I'm looking at you with a side eye like,
Come on, stay relevant, bro.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Exactly. So that's where Vigil came. So I started writing it. Actually, the storyline came to me when I was real little, but I thought it was going to be a comic more so than... But basically, the premise of the books that I'm writing right now are more like sci-fi, political thriller themed books. I have two out. The first one's called Vigil, which is revolves around some characters who are a government sanctioned task force who have special abilities. When they on their first mission, they find out there's a conspiracy that they kind of have to uncover. and get down to the bottom of. Yeah, yeah. In terms of that conspiracy, links back to their original purpose as a team. So
interesting. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
Awesome. So. And now they said there's a second book too.
Correct. Yeah. Second book. So the second book is called Sovereign. So that one I just released that one in 2020, end of 2021. And that one continues the storyline from the first book, and it basically takes a team on another adventure where they're interacting with a tech organization that basically runs the whole technological infrastructure of the United States. So basically, you've heard, wow. You know, we've all heard of the things of like Internet of Things, where you have like your TV, your phone. Like, we already have that now with Siri and all this other stuff kind of running our homes, right? We have like Internet of Things running our homes, and then also having a grid where your whole grid is run by like AI, where you have like the autonomous drive, you know, autonomous cars, you have autonomous planes and all that stuff like that. So yes, it's kind of set in that world. And then basically this guy, Dennis Stroud is the name of the head of the tech company. Think about a mix up of Steve Jobs and what's his name? Steve Jobs, Lex Luthor, and Zuckerberg.
That's cool.
Yeah. I like that.
Yeah.
That's a super villain.
Yes.
Man, this is like Afrofuturism, huh?
Yeah, really? Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, a little bit.
Love it.
Yeah, so the team has to combat him. And of course, yep, you mentioned Travis about Afrofuturism. So yeah, so the team is led by a Black woman, and then we also have good representation, ethnic representation within the group itself. So I wanted to make sure I had characters that were diverse and that, you know, that weren't just like a cliche. So
I love it, man. Where can anyone get these books?
So they can go on Amazon. They can actually go soon. I'm actually going to direct sell it soon on my website. I'm actually working on it right now. But
tell us the website, please.
Yeah, so my website is www.pb, as in boy, then my last name, obeng.com. www.pbobeng.com. And then that's where people can find the books. And I'm also working on selling merchandise through there as well. And so we're trying to get it, all the kinks worked out. So it should be up and running shortly, but they can go there, and they can actually go to, I have another website. We just switched the old author website to kind of like almost like a fan website. Let me actually do it this way. Let me see. Let's see if it's transferred over, because I want to make sure that I give you the right URL.
Now you big things. They're going to find you anyway.
Nah, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
Okay. It's okay. So we're still working on that one. So yeah, if you go to www.pbobeng.com, you should be able to see the books there. And then my books are available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Kobo, Google Play. They're all available. Pretty much any platform you Google it, you should be able to find it. So
nice. Oh, what inspires you to write? What inspires you to write, Dr.
Howard? That's a good question, Dr. Howard. I it's an outlet for me, and also it's another way of, you know, speaking to people outside of just the being inside the clinic, you know, or being just a doctor. Like, this is something just like you guys are doing this podcast. What I think is amazing is that, you know, we as doctors, we're more than just, oh, I'm a radiologist, or I'm an internist, or I'm an ICU doctor, I'm a surgeon. Like, we have other aspects to ourselves that we need to express ourselves. And I think writing is kind of like my way of expressing myself outside of medicine. Mm-hmm. And and it's a good way to, speak on things or address certain things maybe that I want to address that I can't address at work.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it, man. That's what's cool. Up.
It's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh man, we appreciate you taking the time with us, man. We're gonna get you out of here on this last question real quick. So tell us, so what would you tell someone who is interested in medicine and kind of struggling? What would you tell them?
I would say, don't give up. If you feel like this is something you're called to do, and again, I feel like medicine is definitely a calling, because you could be doing so many other things. You could be an investment banker, you could work for Google, you could drive Uber, you could be making so much more money and have less stress than being a doctor. So I feel like this, don't give up, and definitely one thing I would say, once you do get in, and I know we didn't talk about this on this podcast, but you know, as you get along your medical journey, you want to make sure that you also have your money right too. That's the other thing I listen to. Mm. And I'm sure you guys listen to the different podcasts, but like there's a podcast called, of course, White Coat Investor. That I encourage people, encourage people to listen to with Jim Dolly. And then Docs Outside the Box with Dr. Nee Darko. He's actually like us. He's a younger physician. He's from Ghana too. And he's he talks on everything from the pop culture stuff to the financial stuff too. And he's also a great guy. I listen to, I know him personally as well, but definitely a good person. I would say make sure your money is right after you get out of medicine or after you got out of residency. So
spend so much time, you spend so much time just doing the education part, but then you're actually paying that whole time. So
yes
you gotta figure out how to get the money right, definitely. And like you kind of become prey, you know, to you know, people who like are willing to take advantage of you, trying to take advantage of you. That's great advice, man. I love it, man.
Thank you.
Tough to enjoy, you know, the perks of medicine if you can't get the money right. So
That's right.
Oh man, Pac, we're gonna have you back, man. This is
thank you so much.
We really appreciate you taking the time.
Absolutely, man.
I appreciate you guys having me. I'm really honored to be part of your podcast, and I'm really happy that you guys are doing this. I think it's an amazing show. You guys need to continue, you know, doing podcasts. I think it's always good for people out in on the grind in either medical school, trying to get a medical school or a residency, to hear, you know, these types of podcasts. So I definitely encourage you guys. This is a great work you're doing.
Well, I appreciate it, man. Yeah, thank you. Yes. And thank you. Thank you for listening. And all Buckeyes out here today.
Amen. Right. That's right. It's an OH.
Representing IO.
That's your IO. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. And tell everyone, until next time, stay low and keep fire.
Please subscribe, rate, and review on iTunes or wherever you get your pods.